Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeff Diddy. I'm with the Public Health Foundation Enterprises, or PHFE, better known. PHFE is a nonprofit public health agency located out of the City of Industry or Los Angeles, California. And we provide consulting and fiscal sponsorship services. So just small background info there. Today, I'm here to talk a little bit about EMR implementation, specifically in public health environments. This is not a new concept for a lot of public health agencies, but for many, it is a new endeavor that many agencies are either being faced with, looking at, contemplating. It's in their future, potentially. And so I put together a brief presentation to look at the different ways that they can be implemented for public health, and specifically taking a look at utilizing industry best practices that already exist and how you can reduce the risk for your implementation for a successful project. So as a brief overview, as many of us are well aware, there's a lot of emphasis moving towards the development of an electronic health record for individuals on a national level. There's been many advancements in the last couple of years with many organizations and entities getting involved with electronic medical record systems, health information exchange efforts, all to go to this common goal of being able to have this information on an electronic level and be able to exchange it seamlessly across different organizations to better the health of communities. For public health departments, this means a number of different things. As we are all very well aware, public health agencies at the state and local level have such a diverse set of programs, services, and even the way those are carried out in a lot of jurisdictions may differ. So when it comes to implementing such a system within this type of environment, there are many things that have to be considered prior to even selection, implementation, even embarking on this type of project. And to just give a kind of an example, I provided some different types of implementations by range. Typically, from our experience, they go down to basically two different areas: scope and the number of organizations that participate, and we'll go into that in a second. But to look at the example ranges that may be out there, there are public health departments out there that operate full-scale primary clinics. These may be FQHC clinics, they may be lookalikes, they may be a portion of one of the two. Either way, they're providing primary or clinical care services underneath the public health department itself. For many public health departments, the concept of this may be even a little bit foreign, but they do exist. Sometimes it's basically at a program level. It may just be very program specific. And that's where we're starting to see some of these, what I'll refer to as EMR light solutions that possibly come into play. They're not full scale implementations and they don't have the complexity to them necessarily that many of the full scale EMR solutions do. It may just be a simple read-only view into the record, being able to just see specific data or data elements that they can use to do further analysis and reporting for their community. And then there's the one that I think the public health organizations are most familiar with, and that is case or community reporting, right? This is that aggregate view of looking into the community as a whole, and looking at trends within the population. And this is all information that from an EMR perspective can be extracted and looked at as a whole rather than on an individual level. So the other way to look at this is by stakeholders. And this is something that a lot of us are very common, that's very common with organizations, especially when you look at large scale projects. And when you look at something like an EMR, while it may be specific to a single organization, it also can be a collaborative initiative as well. And when we look at the different types of implementations, it could be within a single public health organization. It also could be within multiple government organizations within a single jurisdiction. For example, Department of Corrections or prisons, and Public Health Department. That's a common scenario that we're starting to see a little bit more and more. Also, there's the collaborative approach, where it might not just be public health, but it may be also other community-based providers that are all working together in a collaborative. And this is primarily for a few different reasons. One of the most common being economies of scale. These solutions can be expensive, depending on the scope and implementation. They can also be overwhelming in terms of resources, just like any large-scale software project can be. And by using the resources of the community amongst different organizations, they can leverage these assets a little bit better. So how can we really reduce the risk and increase the chance for success to implement these types of systems into public health? The answers lie in solutions that are not new. They've been around the information technology industry for a long time. It's how you apply them. And some, for a lot of organizations, these concepts may be new. They may be intimidating. But they have been proven, and it's a way of harnessing all of these best practices and placing them into your project to help reduce the risk. So one of the things I wanted to bring up, and this is by no means a formal definition, I think that this is something that all of us on a national level try to figure out at some point, and that's the acronym tree when it comes to these types of systems. I've put together a slight visual, at least, to help define these types of systems so that when I bring them up further in my discussion, we at least have some common ground for what we're talking about. But also just to look at how these distinct types of systems or information solutions are related to one another. So looking at the PMS, or the practice management system, something that is actually doing the scheduling, the appointments. Most of the times we see these in our local doctor's offices when we go in. More commonly used in the clinical setting, but for public health agencies do have a purpose, depending on the services that they may provide. These types of systems generally connect or can connect to the EMR itself, which is that back-end data structure that holds all of those common data elements that help comprise into an individual's record. And a lot of this are your test results, any radiology images, associated data that's going to go along with that individual's case and clinical service. There may be multiple EMRs out there. Individuals may be go to multiple providers. This is where the complexity starts, but you can make some sense of the madness. In an electronic health record, this is the goal that on a national level we're all looking at, and that is where you're going to have multiple systems that feed data for individuals into, I'm not going to say whether it's going to be a common central or whatever type structure. That there's lots of different solutions for that. The whole point is that it's all relatable. And you'll be able to access through this. This comprises your entire health record itself. We're still not going to get away from paper-based records. Those are still going to continue to be there for quite a long time. If they may be there for longer than we think. That still constitutes as part of the overall personal record for an individual, and they have to be taken into consideration. So the little diagram I put together is just my way of understanding when I'm talking to organizations, vendors, or even individuals, how these things line up and how they play together. Hopefully it would be beneficial for you. So getting into the best practices of this, what can we do to when embarking on such a project of this magnitude? And like I said, these are not new concepts. Many of you may be familiar with all or maybe even individual pieces of them. And what we've done is has had success in looking at just basically pulling them all together and being able to utilize them within environments to really reduce the chance of Project Failure. These are by no means have to align and work together. They're all individual methodologies in themselves. But by pulling them together, we can put together a pretty comprehensive framework for addressing a project implementation such as an EMR. So why do we use them? Well, this really probably comes as no surprise to many of us in the HIT arena or IT arena, period. But in being inconsistent with general IT projects in general, a study that's been going on over the last few years that looked at over 1,800 EMR implementations showed that over 50% of them failed. Now, this is not specific to public health. This is just widespread in general. But looking at why these may have failed, if you look at some of the bullets up on my slide, you'll see that there is a common tone here. And if you look at them, these are things that probably are not necessarily specific to EMR systems, but in IT projects in general. Lack of training was by far one of the biggest ones, and it was training of actual providers themselves or the end users of these systems. Not a new concept, but something we must take into consideration. One of the other ones that stands out is lack of workflow management. This, for EMR systems, the amount of workflows and processes that providers go through to provide clinical care is grand, and not just from the clinician's perspective. The administrative side is just as impressive when it comes to the amount of workflows and processes that do exist. And these systems have to look at being able to capture all of that depending on what the needs of the organization are. And that was one of the key things that I'll discuss later that had come up in terms of failure. So when it all really boils down to it, one of the basic reasons why that we should be looking at such best practices is to just to leverage and protect the investment that the organization is going to go through. Any software implementation, and EMRs are no exception, they take time, resources, and mostly cost and funding. And for public health entities, all three of these are very scarce resource at times, and we need to be able to take advantage of them as much as we can throughout the project. So in moving through, I'm going to go over basically a five-step process. Framework for looking at implementing an EMR within a public health environment. These have been put together based upon different best practice scenarios for different types of software implementation. And all five of them and going through them can really help reduce the risk and increase the success of implementing EMR within a public health environment. So to start off is the basic needs assessment. And for many of us that have gone through projects of this magnitude, that needs assessment, everyone goes through and says, okay, we've got to develop business requirements. That is a fundamental portion of this. There's hands down, it's one of the most important. However, there are many other pieces in going through and identifying the needs in your organization that you should be taking into account as you go through. Business requirements or technical requirements is a big portion of that. But in also to go along with it, this is where we should be looking at what are our business processes right now? What are our workflows? Those requirements should map back to those processes. But it's also equally important to have both. When vendors come in, they're going to look at those requirements and they're going to say, yes, our system may or may not be able to meet those. But it's one thing to meet them, and it's another thing to meet them in the environment in which you work. They're two different things, and so they have to be considered. Another thing that will come out of this needs assessment that is very important is there may be information that's really specific to the organization. And this is important for a number of different reasons. One, if there is a procurement process, which we will look at later down in the presentation, this information will be extremely valuable in that process. It also allows your selected vendor to really get a feel for your environment. You know, the This can be volume information. It could be the amount of cases you take on. It could be the number of staff you have. It could be physical locations that they're looking at. The more familiar they are with your environment, the more they can actually fine-tune their type of solution to place into that environment. And like I said, all this information is extremely critical when moving forward and looking at any type of procurement processes down the road. Along with that needs assessment, another thing that I think a lot of times is overlooked is the infrastructure assessment. This is actually just looking at your base infrastructure in general. Can your environment support the different types of implementations that may come through? These systems, they vastly differ in scope, size, architecture, and depending on your true needs that you need, you may have 10 different vendors come back and basically propose 10 extremely different systems to meet your requirements. This is important because before you go through this process, you need to understand what you're capable of doing as an organization in terms of your infrastructure. And this isn't just, are our servers secure? Are they reliable? That is a portion of it. Part of it's looking at general policies and procedures that do exist. These are all things that any vendor for any product, when they want to come in and they want to be successful, they're going to come in and they're going to look and say, do these things exist? If they do exist, it shows organization, it shows procedure, it shows things, it shows order exists. And which helps reduce their risk of actually implementing a solution. Environmental controls, security, even telephone systems, these are all part of the overall infrastructure. And this could be within just a single location. It could be distributed amongst 20 different sites, which, they all need to be looked at. And all it does is further prepare you as an organization with the confidence to say we're ready to take this on. There will be no surprises that come up. We all know there will be surprises. It's the whole point is reducing those down. So another step in the framework that in my mind is probably one of the most critical is looking at it, your procurement and your project management processes or methodologies that may exist. I don't think I can stress this enough, the importance of this throughout implementing this type of solution. While many of us work for agencies that probably have gone through some type of procurement process, they understand what an RFP is, they understand what an RFI is, it doesn't mean that it is successfully practiced. And with these types of solutions, knowing that even over the past 5 years, what an EMR meant 5 years ago to what it means today are two different things. It's an evolving industry. As healthcare needs and requirements change, so do these systems. Because of the complexity behind them and the different architectural designs that comprise these systems, it's really necessary to gain an understanding who can support you as a public health agency, primarily because these systems were not designed for public health in mind. They were designed primarily for clinical and primary practice. It doesn't mean that they can't support those needs that may be under public health as well, but the whole point is we need to understand that prior to going through and calling up somebody, can I see a demo of your product and let's sit down and talk a little bit more about how we can get it in our environment. We've all probably seen that as well. So having a strong procurement process in place, being able to distribute RFIs and RFPs, and being able to successfully go through and negotiate the contracting process is extremely important. There are many different exceptions to contracting that many different vendors will take on, and some organizations will as well, implementing organizations. So it's important to have these in place, along with just the general procurement to be able to, the processes to be able to review these systems, adequately select them, based on the needs that have come out of the organization. It's looking at a strong project management and governance structure for the project. This is extremely critical for any type of project that is considered maybe a large project or expands more than one organization. For those of us who have worked in government before, we sometimes know that different government organizations have a hard time playing together on different projects. This type of project, depending on the scope and implementation, would be no exception. Having that governance structure in place not only allows for free-flowing communication, but efficiency in decision-making. And each vendor that comes through is going to see this, and if it's in place, it's a strong key that this type of implementation can go forward successfully. So we get actually into the implementation, and there are many different things that we have to consider here. And as we go through, and a lot of these points that are up here, many of you may be able to look up there and go, I've actually have a methodology in place to address this. I actually have a methodology in place to address this too. The whole point is that all these things really need to be considered, and by all means, the bullet points I have up there are not inclusive. They are just a strong suggestion of what should be considered when going through. With an EMR system, those of us who are familiar with them, we realize that since there are so many subcomponents to these systems, in order to have success in implementing each section, whether it is just system interfaces, whether it is a radiology component, whether it's an e-prescribing component, whatever may be necessary, there are going to be different individuals, different resources, and possibly completely different processes that need to be looked at when these things go in. This is where the idea of work groups come into play. These implementation work groups, there may be 4, there may be 50. Depending on the scope and what services are needed, these things will need to be implemented, and these will be your grassroots people at the organizational level that are actually going through and making sure the system meets their needs and their processes. That whole process needs to be managed. I mean, this is a completely dynamic process, and having all these different work groups and different things happening all at one time, you still need an overarching project structure in place to be able to maintain what's going on. And going through, we look at things as, does the project need to be broken down into different phases? Does we need to look at the core system? Do we need to look at interfaces separately? Are there different things that need to be broken down to be able to implement successfully? You know, what does the architecture and the design of it look like? And how do we have to deal with it to move through? All this needs to go through, including different testing needs. Training is a key element here. These are all things that as you go through implementation are going to have to be considered and addressed in many ways. And there are best practices out there to address them. And one of the last steps in the framework that I think that doesn't get a lot of recognition and is probably one of the more important pieces in this puzzle is looking at how you do your work after the tool is in. A lot of people think, I'm going to get this great tool, it's going to make my work better, but they don't bother looking at how they do it, how they did it then versus what tool they have and how they can do it better now. This is all going about looking at how you do your work. Does it need to be re-engineered? Do your processes need to be altered slightly? Because you have this now robust tool that can help you with controlling your information, and it can be more efficient. It also can actually make your customer service worse. And this is something that as we move forward, is starting to bubble up as one of the more critical elements of an implementation. So I can't really stress enough the importance of looking at your workflows and going through a re-engineering process at the end. So just to kind of wrap up my presentation, these EMR solutions do not need to be intimidating. They don't need to be these monster complex systems that we look at that are only suited for hospital organizations. The reality is that there are many different programs and services within public health agencies across the nation that maybe even in the smallest form up into the largest are developing data that are going to be part of that overall health record. And right now, when we look at that type of solution, even the vendor community at some point is really struggling, saying, how do we meet the needs of these agencies? Well, the answers lie in best practices that already exist. It's identifying truly what those needs are and scaling up or down these solutions to meet those needs. This will allow public health, regardless of the size and scope of those services provided out, to continue to be a major partner in the healthcare system moving forward from an information technology perspective, and will also allow for you to have a greater chance of success for implementing such a project.
Thank you, Jeff.